Welcome to today's edition of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast.
Welcome in, everybody, to the Wednesday edition of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. Clay and I are ready to take you through all of the latest, including the big breaking news right now that Supreme Court Justice Breyer is, in fact, retiring. This is now reported on CNN, ABC, Fox News got it. So just breaking last few minutes, there's going to be a vacancy on the Supreme Court. Breyer, a staunch leftist, I would say a judicial activist, somebody who legislates from the bench, he will be retiring and they were going to have to replace him. And Clay and I will break down how that's going to be a very interesting and clearly, in some ways, I think, quite contentious process. So we've got that for you in just a moment. Also, school board meetings, once again, a frontline battle, and this time over mask mandates in schools. You'll notice that when it comes to masks, the left is adamantly anti-choice. You are not allowed to have your child in school without a mask on. It's too dangerous, they say. Big fights breaking out over this in Pennsylvania, in Loudoun County, Virginia. We've got a lot to discuss there. Parents are getting really upset over this one. And once again, you make the moms angry. You make the moms and dads across America feel like their kids are, I argue this and I stand behind it, they're being abused by the state. This is abusive. Finally, I think there's pushback. You'll notice in places where there are governors who are Republicans all of a sudden and who are changing the way they enforce masks in schools, Virginia, then all of a sudden the school districts are suing and school boards are saying we will not comply. And there's New York now has a fight making its way through the courts over this, as if masking in schools is going to keep kids safe. I mean, this is absurd. They have no data on this because it's ridiculous. Unless you believe that when someone's having their, you know, their graham crackers and juice time and the mask is down for 30 minutes or an hour or whatever, that they're not being exposed to the same virus that they'd be exposed to. The whole thing makes no sense. Oh, and monoclonal antibodies, another major front in the fight over how we get through this virus and where we go next. FDA saying no monoclonal antibody allowance anymore for people. You're not allowed to be giving it to folks. But Clay, I know we just hit this right before, right at the very top today. I think that you're going to have, I mean, look, there's some things that are obvious about the Supreme Court justice opening here with Breyer set to retire. Rhymes, sorry. It's going to be a leftist. It's going to be a lib they replace him with, a true judicial activist. But it's also, according to Biden, going to be more specific than that. What do you think this turns into? What's the situation?
Well, he promised, this news just broke literally as we were about to come on the air, Stephen Breyer stepping down. I think there's a bunch of big headlines associated with this decision. First of all, it's important to remember that Joe Biden promised that he was going to put a black woman on the Supreme Court. He not only said that he was going to put a woman on, he specifically said that he was going to put a black woman on. So the potential list of nominees is probably the shortest list that has ever existed in the history of the Supreme Court, because there just aren't that many black women sitting at high levels of the judiciary that could be available as nominees for this seat. So let's start there. So it's a relatively short list. Joe Biden has already promised that it's going to be a black woman. Now, there are several different angles associated with this. First of all, let's talk about Breyer's decision. This is an implicit acknowledgement that he does not feel good about Republicans retaining the Senate in the midterms coming up in 2022. Now, the Senate is a lot more up in the air. If you look, and I'm kind of a political junkie, so you look at all these different states and who's going to win them. Remember, Democrats have the 50-50 tiebreak right now. But this is an implicit acknowledgement that he does not like the odds there. And by the way, Mitch McConnell told CNN, the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, that there was roughly a 50-50 chance he thought that Republicans would take back the Senate. So in other words, this is not the slam dunk that taking back the House appears to be right now, even if you get a Republican surge in the midterm. But this is a sign that Democrats are not particularly optimistic about taking back the Senate. And that might also be a sign, Mitch McConnell's prediction, that he's trying to play down expectations as opposed to set them too high. Also here, what is going to happen We saw what a, and I want to curse, but I'm not, what a crap show the Brett Kavanaugh commencement, Senate Judiciary Committee hearings were. We saw not as much of a fracas surrounding Amy Coney Barrett. Certainly Gorsuch was not as controversial either. What will this process look like? Will Republicans be united in opposing whoever Democrats put forward? If they are, then that would demand that Kamala Harris, as the president of the Senate, the tiebreaker there, vote 50-50 to break the tie and put someone onto the Supreme Court. And there's going to be a lot of talk about this. Is there any possibility, given that his criteria is he's going to put a black woman on the Supreme Court, is there any possibility that this is the exit strategy for Democrats to run away from Kamala Harris as their presumptive takeover candidate for Joe Biden? Could they, in some way, put her on the Supreme Court? Whether we can get into whether or not she's qualified, she at least qualifies based on Biden's standard of being a black woman. And then it turns into an interesting question. Would Democrats oppose that? Or would they think, hey, you know what? I kind of like the idea of Kamala Harris on the Supreme Court. Let's get her out of the political equation in the same way. And could Kamala Harris break the tie if Republicans were united against her opposition and vote for herself to ascend to the Supreme Court? So there are a bunch of angles here. They had been a lot of pressure on Stephen Breyer to step down. This would appear to be the only Supreme Court seat that is likely to open for Joe Biden. And it would maintain, like you said, Buck, the 6-3 situation in the voting power in the Supreme Court.
There will be less of a battle royale over this just based on the fact that you're not taking somebody who the left has come. You're not taking a seat the left has come to view as, let's be honest about this, built in for them and reliable as left-wing legislation from the Supreme Court, as they can with Sotomayor. And for the most part, Kagan's a little less so than Sotomayor and Breyer up to this point, right? So they know that this is going to go with somebody who aligns with Breyer, who is, I mean, I think you'd argue, the second most liberal, probably, maybe Sotomayor. Obviously, Breyer has a longer history of opinions, but certainly a staunch leftist on the court, no question about it. I think, Clay, if we're in the prediction game right now, you're right about Biden. I mean, you're stating a fact about Biden saying he would nominate a black woman to the Supreme Court. I think what we're going to see is Democrats find a jurist. I don't know who is on the short list right now. I'm sure they have one who is a black female. And I think that individual is likely to have radical left-wing politics through the prism of a judge's bench. I mean, that's going to be something that's absolutely essential for them here. I think you will actually see some Republican senators support it. I think you will see this judge get voted through with Republican support. I do not think you will see a united front. There are some members of the Senate on the Republican side who will simply not vote against the first female black Supreme Court justice. That's what I think is going to end up happening here. And I know people might say, wait, but it's about the credentials and absolutely. But I think that there are some Republican. I mean, guys, does anyone really think Mitt Romney is? Let's start to look at some of the folks involved here. You think who's Ben Sasse? Who's Mitt Romney going to be voting for in this process?
I will say this as this is me putting my lawyer hat on. Supreme Court nominations were nowhere near the political show for almost the entirety of our nation's history. In other words, the presumption was if you are the president and your party controls the Senate, you should get the opportunity to put somebody on the Supreme Court that you choose, presuming that they're qualified, right? We've had issues before where people have been nominated. Remember, George W. Bush tried to put Harriet Myers on the Supreme
Court.
Not
good. And
people
not
just
even
said, yeah,
the right, to be fair. Remember, the right turned on him on that.
That's
one.
Right. And I mean, that's to me the standard, right? You want to look, there are all different sorts of people who can agree or disagree with you. Every opinion that Justice Clay Travis would issue would be different than every opinion that Justice Sotomayor would put out, right? It doesn't mean, however, that because those opinions are different, someone is not qualified to be on the Supreme Court. So, I don't know that when you know already that the votes are there, clearly every Democrat's going to support it. I don't know. It feels very much to me like a charade to make a big deal of opposing someone, assuming that they are qualified. So much like what happened with Amy Coney Barrett, you know, that was one of those situations, Buck, where she was replacing Ruth Bader Ginsburg. So you were flipping the power in a dynamic in a large extent. And yet Amy Coney Barrett was so eminently qualified. And I thought the Trump administration and McConnell and everybody else did such a phenomenal job of rolling her out. There was a terror on the Democratic side, really, to attack her aggressively because she was a suburban mom, because she was eminently qualified, and she kind of coasted, even though we were in the middle of a divisive presidential election. And I feel like if Biden puts forward, and I'm not an expert in all the possible nominees here, I feel like if Biden puts forward a nominee who is within the scope of reasonableness, I don't think there's much of a battle here.
There's not going to be.
You already know what the end result is.
I think we're almost assured there will not be a battle over this. Republicans don't have the desire, nor really much of the ability. I also do believe, and you know, mark my words on this, you'll get a few Republicans who will be happy to vote for it, assuming it's this is a jurist who fits the established Biden criteria for diversity and inclusion, but also from a legal background. But in terms of Amy Coney Barrett, they just couldn't have a bunch of people show up who said Amy Coney Barrett sexually assaulted me 30 years ago. Like, that wasn't going to work, right?
I mean, that's true.
But I don't think that they learned a lesson in terms of, oh, now they're going to be less disgusting than they were after Kavanaugh. They just couldn't run the same playbook. And they started to try a little bit on some of the abortion stuff with Amy Coney Barrett, but it didn't have the same resonance. They couldn't create the circus.
They tried to say, like, I think she's adopted a couple of minority children. And they trotted out like that's racist.
They were temporarily anti-adoption on the left, yes, because of Amy Coney, which was disgusting. But these people are lunatics.
And then they realized that was blowing back on them, and they knew that they needed suburban women in order to have a chance to win against Trump. And so they ran in the opposite direction. But here's the bigger takeaway, Buck, as we go to break. What's likely to happen is for 2 years, if the Republicans take back the Senate, there's not going to be anybody confirmed to the Supreme Court. So if there were another vacancy after November of 22, there wouldn't be the votes in order to get there. That's likely to be decided in 24, much like what happened with Scalia in 16. If somebody dies or somebody has to step down after 22, after the midterms, assuming that Republicans have control of the Senate, we could have a 2-year vacancy.
Breyer's the one that is, I mean, he's the guy that is assumed that this was going to happen just based on age and the political realities around him. So I don't think you're, I mean, who else? Thomas?
Well,
just
when you get to people who are over 70 years old,
they may retire.
Health conditions can arise. I mean, nobody, I don't think, foresaw Scalia dying when he did. And so I just think that's worth factoring in there. We could have a 2024 election that also is definitively deciding who's going to be nominating a Supreme Court justice like we saw in 16.
We love our Black Rifle Coffee here on this show, folks. It's here in studio with me right now. We like to be fully caffeinated, drinking the good stuff. Black Rifle makes amazing tasting coffee. When you make a pot each morning, or like me, I'm a little lazy, so I use the K-Cups because it's easy. It's so delicious. And this is a veteran-owned company founded by a great guy I've known for years who brought his lifelong passion for a cup of coffee to a company that is exploding in popularity and is all about helping with veteran law enforcement and first responder causes. And the best way to enjoy our freedom-filled coffee is with the Black Rifle Coffee Club. Clay, tell us about the coffee club and how folks can get hooked up.
Man, it is a fantastic thing. I love Black Rifle Coffee. I usually have one during the show. I got the Mocha Cold Brew. Absolutely love it. You can sign up as well. By the way, they brew this in Utah and in my home state of Tennessee. Beans that are sourced out of Colombia and Brazil. Hook yourself up right now with the BlackRifleCoffee.com. Use our code Clay and Buck in the checkout process to get 20% off your purchase and your first coffee club order. That's BlackRifleCoffee.com, code Clay and Buck. Welcome back in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. Appreciate all of you hanging out with us. We were talking about all the craziness that's going on in the state of Virginia as the battles over masks and CRT and more continue. We've got Carrie Lucas joining us now. She's the head of the Independent Women's Network, a mom of 5 kids in public schools in Virginia. Carrie, I've got a couple of kids in public schools here in Tennessee. I went and spoke out against masks back before the school year really got rolling in August. I know you guys are continuing to fight these battles in Virginia. What's the latest there?
Yeah, I hope you've had more success than we have. You know, it's interesting because obviously we've had this wonderful new world where Governor Youngkin comes in and really is ready to stand up for parents on this first day of office. You know, he issued an executive order that didn't rescind the mask mandate, but immediately gave parents an opt-out. You were supposed to have the ability to opt your kids out of the mask mandates pretty much, and that was supposed to start this week. But some of the Northern Virginia, kind of intransigent, blue school districts pushed back. They said no. There's a big lawsuit battle going on. And my school, the kids' system that they're in, has said that any kid who tries to come to school without a mask is getting suspended. And, you know, I decided to make a point. Got two of my kids thrown out of school yesterday. So,
how old are your kids?
So, I have my oldest is 16 and my littlest is 7. And so I just went to our elementary school where the stakes are pretty low and it's a much smaller school. So I have a good relationship with the teachers and the administration there. So, so it seemed like the safest place to kind of do this pushback.
Carrie, you shared a photo. I mean, it seems like this is getting pretty tense, even at your own school. We're talking about kids here, whether or not they're wearing masks. Are there parents who are, what are they? Are they going to call cops on people who don't wear the mask? I mean, what is the enforcement mechanism here? And are there other parents who are coming along to your side of things more publicly than they have in the past?
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting because I feel like the conversation we could be having today could be entirely different if the Fairfax County Public School System had just had a little faith in parents and in kind of humanity. It's so funny because when I knew I was going to do this and my grievance is with the school board, which is refusing to give parents this option, and I know that my little elementary school here is just following their orders. So I went ahead the night before this was going to happen. The first day of school was Tuesday for the kids had off for some reason on Monday. So I sent an email to the principal and said, hey, I feel strongly about this. I want to exercise my rights. I know that this puts you in an awkward position. You know, I didn't want to blindside them. I was very polite and said I would accept that they have to suspend my kids. And the thing that was so strange is, I arrive at the school in the morning with my two little kids in tow and with a couple of friends, one of whom was, a reporter for the Daily Wire was coming with us. Luke, who is an area, lives real close to the school, and another woman, Asra Nomani, who filmed some of it just so we had a record of what was happening. And there was a security guard there who was really gave you the sense that they were expecting some kind of trouble, which is ridiculous because, of course, we were just there to have this conversation with our school. It was very strange that they felt the need to really treat us as if we were hostile and couldn't be trusted.
How long are the suspensions?
Oh, just for the day. So they basically, it was interesting because you could tell that the woman who was in charge of the school, the vice principal, she very much avoided. You could tell she didn't want to say that they were suspended. And my conversation with her was very cordial. But at the same time, there was and some of this is on tape at Azra Nomani's Substack, where you can watch this video, where the security guard is really hassling, especially Luke, the reporter for the Daily Wire, who eventually wrote a story on this, telling me to get off the sidewalk and really treating him as though, that he didn't have a right to be there, which seemed very strange and just crazy. And so that's what made the story. And the funniest part was this security guard at one point pulled down the mask to bark at some of my friends and this and Luke. And they said, why do you need to pull your mask down? He's like, well, I can't talk through it. And we said, that's exactly right. That's why we're here.
Carrie, so this is the part of this. Funny. Explain, the governor comes in. He's the governor, right? And up, I live in New York, and so I've had to just, accept the stupidity of whether it was the former mayor de Blasio or the former or now current governor, whether it was Cuomo or Hochul. You know, their order was treated as law when it comes to things like masking. So Youngkin comes in. He changes things, but there are school districts that are just saying no? I mean, is that what's happening? Because that seems kind of crazy.
Yeah, it seems lawless. It's absolutely, and you know, we're being told that we should sit back and wait, and that the courts, the Virginia Supreme Court, is going to sort out who has the authority here. But I agree. I see no reason why the default should be that my school boards get to continue to really cram down this mask requirement on our kids. Which again, you know, this would allow parents who wanted to mask to continue to mask their kids, but to give us some freedom from this absolutely ridiculous rule at this point. But yeah, I mean, I don't understand why it is that Fairfax County Public Schools has this authority when this EO is in place and hasn't been stayed.
Carrie, so here's my question. I'm obviously a parent who is a complete in agreement with everything that you're doing. I'm also a lawyer. So my thought is, every day that you show up without your kids wearing a mask, they suspend you for that day. Is that theoretically what the policy would be?
Well, yeah, I mean, that is what the policy is. So my kids did go back to school today. I didn't, you know, they missed so much time with online school last year that I didn't want to keep them out. But yeah, one reason why I went there yesterday, because I wanted them to have to enforce this, kind of to go through with it, because if no parents kind of objected, then there wouldn't be any harm being caused, and I didn't think we would be able to, or no, you know, actionable harm, where now my kids were barred from having an education yesterday. And yeah, so I've options open, I think, if I did want to.
Well, that's what I'm saying. From a legal perspective, at some point, if you are defying, and I'm just working through the law here, if you're defying as the school board, the governor of the state of Virginia's regulations to allow parents to choose whether their kids wear masks, and if they are effectively standing in the schoolhouse door, to use a historical analogy, and barring your children from being able to enter, yours or other children, then you would have a very strong case legally to immediately go to court and say, this policy that is being implemented by this Northern Virginia school district is not permissible under the law. So I would hope you and or other parents are going to seek redress because they specifically barred your children. You have evidence of it occurring from entering school and getting an education in direct contravance of the rule of the governor. Like that is a pretty clear cut case, I would think.
Yeah, I hope so. And you know, it's funny because you know, I hate this kind of thing. I think that it's so frustrating. But here we have, it's not only just that the school is refusing, that they're using my tax dollars to put their own lawsuit against the governor. You know, they were hiring security guards to harass us yesterday. They had a PR flack there to make sure that, you know, that people couldn't listen to me have this, you know, very polite conversation with this this woman who was suspending my kids. They're so wasteful and hostile. That you're right. Absolutely. There are people speaking about the potential for a lawsuit, and we're going to see how this all plays out.
Carrie Lucas, everybody, thanks for being with us from the Independent Women's Forum. Great to have you, and good luck in this fight because it's very important.
Great. Thanks so much for having me on.
All right. Thanks so much. Clay, I got to say, you know, I just wanted to get that on the record there because they're just saying no now. Like, they don't have the power anymore. People have thrown out their lunatic lib governor. They don't have the right to do this, and schools are just saying no. This is
lawless. They're standing in the schoolhouse door. This is George Wallace style over masks. They're not allowing parents who don't want their kids to wear masks to get an education. And I'm going to share Carrie's Twitter handle so you guys can, if you're in Northern Virginia, you're listening to us, I'll share that online at Clay Travis. She was fantastic. More props to her and other parents for standing up against this. This is crazy.
Get into some more of the latest from Fauci and others coming up.
You're listening to Clay Travis and Buck Sexton on the EIB Network.
Clay Travis and Buck Sexton show here, flying by today. Thanks for being with us. 800-282-2882. Remember to go to clayandbuck.com if you missed our interview with Alex Berenson yesterday. If you want to see, foxnews.com did a story on something I said yesterday. We posted it up at clayandbuck.com. And then Clay was on, I think, Hannity last night. So a lot of stuff that we're doing out there. You can go to the one-stop shop, clayandbuck.com. All right, we have some calls to get to. But first, though, I sent this one to Clay and the team last night. Canada, you know, the same way that I've said, we have to come up with a tagline. If Australia has turned into East Germany with koalas, then I feel like, you know, Canada has turned into, you know, the gulag with maple syrup or something. I mean, they've definitely gone nutso up there over COVID. And this is one of the more extreme things that has come out from the, this is from a Canadian news broadcast. I'm telling you, this is a real thing. They now want to have people who are unvaccinated followed by a store employee to make sure they only are allowed to buy in the store food and pharmaceuticals. No furry hat for you. None of that Mountie garb allowed or whatever they're going to buy. I don't know. I'm doing some Canada stuff here. This is what they say.
Today, big box stores that have a footprint of 1,500 square meters or more are going to have to ask people, customers, to show proof of vaccination. Now, pharmacies and grocery will be exempt from this. So if you're going into a Costco or a Walmart or something like that, where you might be going in to buy groceries or visit the pharmacy, in that case, an employee will have to be with that person as they walk through the store to make sure that they do not go and buy other products or other items that might be in the store.
So, Clay, I just want to be clear. If you're a Canadian who's unvaxxed, you can go into Walmart and you can buy a ham sandwich. They'll allow that because, you know, the virus is like, whoa, you're just buying a ham sandwich. But you reach for a pair of warm wool socks for those cold Canadian winters, they're going to have to throw you right out.
This is unbelievable to me. Okay, so I'm unvaccinated. This is in Quebec. That's a lot of people, right? If I was able to sneak across the border into Canada, because I don't even know if I can get in the country right now unvaccinated. But if I were there, I could go in, like I go into Costco. I don't shop a lot. It's probably not going to shock you, Buck. But I'm not a big shopper. All right. So I go to like Costco and I go to Amazon, and that's almost exclusively where I buy. I occasionally go to the grocery store. Okay. That means if I go into Costco, one of my favorite things to do at Costco is go buy the book section. You know, they have the tons of books and they're usually pretty cheap. Like I would have a minder with me in Quebec who would disallow me to look at the books while I was in Costco and would shunt me back to another aisle. Like I couldn't buy tennis balls. I couldn't buy a toy for my kids. I couldn't buy a book or a jacket.
You'd have someone with a "Hi, my name is Phil" button on, slapping your hand as you try to pick up a copy of White Fragility. Not allowed, sir.
Like, imagine this. You are pushing your cart. I don't know if they would let you use a cart or not, but let's presume you're going to be able to push a cart. And what, this minder would, like, tackle your cart and think about how crazy this is. The minder would disallow where you could push the cart inside of a Costco. Right? Because if you're familiar with Costco, God forbid, you're not getting any samples either, by the way. But if you're familiar with a Costco, they intermix lots of different products. So you're talking about going down an aisle and they might have cereal, but they might also have, batteries. Wait, not too far from the cereal, right? That batteries are impermissible.
This is a proposal for morons. You're already breathing. If you're expelling COVID, which we all are when we're infected, regardless of vaccination status or not. But if you're expelling COVID, it doesn't matter if you grab, you know, a sweatshirt to go with your Cracker Jacks or whatever. I mean, this is the dumbest, but this is what happens. They just keep doing stupid things and they pretend like they're not stupid and they act like we're anti-vax or we're bad people.
What I'm so fascinated about this too is, where do you draw the line in what is an acceptable product, right? So like oranges, you could clearly get. What if you want to get paper towels? What if you want to get like some sort of cleaning agent for your home? Is toilet paper, like what is the line between acceptable food product and maybe connected to food product in some way?
I think one thing we all have to remember through this, and you see it so much with the language about the unvaccinated, which, by the way, now, if you're unboosted, you're effectively treated as, you're not up to date, according to Rochelle Walensky, you're the unvaccinated. The apparatus of control and Fauciism has to have people to blame and has to have outlets for the anxiety of the sheep that listen to all this. So they have to set up these endlessly annoying, stupid, and useless rules so that the people that are breaking the stupid rules are the problem. They're actually turning us against each other with this all the time. This is the same thing you see on the airplanes. You know, I know there are the airline attendants that don't want to enforce the mask rules, but everyone's anxious because they got these masks on. They're all annoyed. We all should recognize how stupid this is. Even the CEO of the airline is like, look, we got a filtration system. You really don't need masks on the plane. And yet people are upset. So what do you do? Do you want them upset at the dumb rule? You don't want them upset at the dumb rule. You want them upset at people for breaking the stupid rule. And this is how they've turned society against itself and why the unvaccinated are public enemy number one in Fauci land.
This reminds me, Buck, in the first moments of the lockdown, my birthday is April 6th. So everything is locked down pretty much around April 6th. I don't remember the official first day that we shut down for 15 days to stop the spread, but it was around the time my birthday happened. Somebody knocks on the door. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Who is it? I go open the door. This is when they were making a big deal about essential versus non-essential businesses and what was allowed. Remember, as much as we're making fun of Canada right now, Governor Whitmer had like crime scene tape up in stores where like you weren't able to go to certain parts of the store. You could only
put that lawnmower down, sir.
Yes. So I open the door and it's somebody standing there with cupcakes. Cupcake delivery. Gigi's Cupcakes, great cupcakes. And I said, wait a minute. They were like, hey, happy birthday. Somebody ordered you cupcakes. And I said, you guys are considered an essential business? And she said, yeah, cupcakes are an essential business. Cupcake store was allowed to stay open and deliver to the homes that were locked down cupcakes. That was an essential business.
Were they really
good,
though?
Many of you out there listening weren't considered an essential business.
Sometimes you need a cupcake. I don't know what to
tell you. By the way, also, ice cream didn't shut down. You could go stand in line. They were physically open. Every ice cream store in America was an essential business.
Oh, that's definitely the case. Elizabeth in Virginia, I wanted to get you in because you're warning us about something that's coming out. Tell us.
Well, I know since you guys are such huge fans of the good Dr. Fauci, I didn't want you to miss an opportunity to get a preview of the documentary. It's supposed to be released, I think, this fall. It's coming out from National Geographic and Disney, but there is a free online viewing of it tomorrow. It's a live stream starting at 6 o'clock Eastern, and you can watch it on demand starting at 8:15, right. And that's on demand till the 31st.
Oh, now so I can start. Thank you, Elizabeth. Now I can start my write-in campaign, Clay, signing of the petition to have the correct title for this, which would be Dr. Anthony Fauci, the biggest healthcare failure of all time.
How about the fact that Fauci had time to do a documentary during COVID? But he claimed that his schedule was too busy to come on our show for 10 minutes.
I mean, I could do it. Fauci's here right now. Clay, the Israel data because of the mask and mitigation and blah-bitty-blah. It could be worse. It could be better. I don't, you know, there we go. We've had Fauci. It's the same thing every day. Same nonsense all the
time. Someone who can get access to Fauci who listens to this show, just ask him about Israel. Somebody in the entire media industry, grill him, please. Just one.
You're listening to Clay Travis and Buck Sexton on the EIB Network.
Why should Americans care about what's happening in Ukraine?
Because it goes to a very fundamental principle of all nations, which is that our borders should be inviolate, that our sovereignty should be respected.
Sovereignty should be respected. That was the Deputy National Security Advisor to the Biden regime yesterday. Welcome back to Clay and Buck Show. I just want to point out, sovereignty is really important when it is 5 or 6,000 miles away in a country that is not America and is not even close to America. That's very important. And if we have to send troops, you know, the Biden regime wants you to know we got to send a whole lot of missiles. I'm seeing the photos of more Javelin anti-tank missiles. Remember, Obama administration actually refused to send Ukraine Javelin anti-tank missiles, too provocative. Trump came in because he's such a Russian stooge and sent Javelin anti-tank missiles, Dragunov sniper rifles and other lethal munitions to Ukraine. And now we're sending a whole lot more, it seems, in the Biden regime's preparation for the possibility of invasion here. But it is fascinating, isn't it? Sovereignty is important for Ukraine. And Clay, we have an obligation, and again, I'm speaking from the Biden regime point of view here, an obligation to take risks and perhaps even blood and treasure spent to protect Ukraine's sovereignty. God forbid, but that could end up happening here. But our sovereignty, a couple of 100,000 people coming in illegally every month, a massive wave of illegal migration that the Biden administration's essentially waving into the country, every state turning into a border state because they're putting them on planes. They're flying them from, you know, they're flying them from McAllen and from El Paso and from wherever to New Jersey and New York and California and Illinois. And you sit there, you say, wait, so everyone else's sovereignty is important, but our sovereignty is racist, I guess. That's what we're told. Racist.
Not only that, the media will actually cover the Ukrainian border issues and not cover the United States border issues. I keep coming back to the Biden presser because it's such a clear window into what media focus is on. Think about how many questions we got surrounding Ukraine and how many questions we got about the border. We didn't get a single question about the murder rate, which has skyrocketed in this country. I saw a data point out, largest U.S. cities, Buck, up 44% the murder rate is since 2019. So in 2020, we were up 30%. We were up again in 2021, such that we are up 44% since then. We didn't get a single question about murder. We didn't get a single question about the border. And what that says to me, compared to all of the obsession that is there with Ukraine, is very often the media's focus is far outside of the scope of what your average person is thinking about. That's why I'm glad to live in a place like Nashville, because I think sometimes you get seduced by whatever your environment is if you're in New York or LA where there's lots of media. You know what people talk about here? Inflation being up massively, masks on their kids in school. They talk about whether or not they feel safe being able to go out into cities. All of those things are what is going to decide the election in 2022. Whatever happens in Ukraine is unlikely to be a major story, but for the fact that, much like Afghanistan, Buck, it can reinforce the overall perception, which is accurate, of incompetence. Remember, usually foreign affairs don't dictate local domestic politics. But when those foreign affairs, like what happened with Afghanistan, reinforces a level of incompetence that resonates with all of the issues that are going on today with inflation and the murder rate and the border failures and everything else, COVID failures that are going on, that's when it has a significance. And I think that's what's happening right now.
I think we've learned a lesson over the last 20 years, not just about why we don't want to be building other societies thousands of miles away for other cultures and other groups of people that are not America. I think we've learned that lesson in ways that I can barely begin to express here on this show right now, but everyone knows what I'm talking about, Iraq, Afghanistan. But beyond that, you know, one of the aspects of Trump's populism that really caught on initially was this revolutionary idea at the time of focusing that the government of the American people should focus on the interest and protection of Americans first. That was all of a sudden, it was like, wait a second, what do you mean? Don't we have to ask the UN for permission before we think about Americans? I mean, don't we have to go to the IMF and wonder what our domestic policies are? Maybe we could have some UN observers for our elections to tell us how to really do it. The rejection of that ideology was one of the key factors in Donald Trump's rising to what they thought was the impossible win in 2016, right? And still the Trump movement continues on, and we may very well have another Trump presidency going forward, as we know. But that's something that I think you've seen the so-called intelligentsia, a word taken from the Russian, by the way. And if people learn about the original Russian intelligentsia, they'd have a very different feeling about what they actually are all about. But anyway, conversation for another day. You can see, Clay, I've had some late nights reading about pre-Soviet Russia. It's very, very instructive about our current times with authoritarianism and the Democrats.
You're one of the only people in America reading about pre-Soviet Russia in any part of your day, other than like Russian history professor somewhere. I do think, to the point on Ukraine, when we went into Afghanistan, there was at least the argument directly connected to 9/11. We're going in to advance American interests because these people attacked us. If we could go back in time, the right time to leave Afghanistan, in my opinion, and declare victory, which would have been a much stronger American foreign policy perspective, was right after we killed Osama bin Laden. If Barack Obama, I bet, had it to do all over again. That's a clear line of demarcation. We went into Afghanistan. We have caught all the people responsible for attacking our country. Now we're going to leave. It would have avoided the disaster that Biden got there. But with Ukraine right now, the American public, the narrative of why we should care, there's no connection there. And so the idea of going in with American interest associated with Ukraine, I think, doesn't pass the smell test for most Americans, who are even more skeptical after the failure in Afghanistan, after we went into Iraq on the presumption of weapons of mass destruction. This was another thing that Trump was willing to talk about, which was almost verboten in Republican politics. It was, hey, I don't think the decision to go into Iraq was the right one. Remember? I mean, that was a revolutionary thing for him to say that I think a lot of people responded to, that connected this idea of American exceptionalism. Let's focus on America. We don't need to be the world's police.
We have a Republican, a conservative base in this country, roughly age, let's call it, 20 to 45. Well, 20 would be until recently we were still in Afghanistan, but let's say roughly 20 to 45. We have a conservative base of people who, and maybe my math is off, you could say into their 50s, but I'm talking about over the last 20 years, we've had people that have experienced the realities of an overactive and overreaching foreign policy from the smartest minds in D.C., by the way, on a bipartisan basis, Republican and Democrat. But the people that are listening to this now who served, the millions of Americans who served in those countries, I think saw a reality up close and personal in the clearest possible ways of what it means when you take the conversations about sovereignty and universal human rights from a think tank near Capitol Hill or in Foggy Bottom and turn it into, we're going to send a bunch of other people to fight a war in a far off country. And we're not exactly entirely sure what not only the mission is going to be in the end, but why we're there in the first place. I mean, certainly in the case of Iraq, that's been the conversation, and with the extension of the Afghanistan mission, too. So I think this is why I'm pretty confident that the American people don't want anything in Ukraine, Clay, don't want us to be in Ukraine in any way that would get us involved in that conflict. But it goes back to your initial point about what does this show us about the Biden regime? I mean, they're floundering.
Yes.
They're having real problems. And one way to get the country mobilized behind you, if you can pull it off, if you look back at the realities of our past, have a war somewhere. And that's what really concerns me.
We know you love freedom and want to defend it. It's one of the reasons we're together every day on this show. And we know you love the Constitution, too. That has defined our freedoms and helped distinguish our nation as the beacon of hope for so many people worldwide. No other college teaches and shares their respect for the Constitution like Hillsdale College, the best liberal arts college in America. Hillsdale's mission is to pursue truth and defend liberty. It gives its undergraduate and graduate students the best education, and it's working to make this education available to all. They offer free online courses and spend a great deal of time and resources supporting great K-12 schools. And each month, Hillsdale publishes a free monthly speech digest. It's all about liberty. It's called Imprimis. Over 6 million households and businesses receive Imprimis for free each month. You can subscribe for free, too, by signing up for free online. Clay and Buck for Hillsdale.com is the website to do all that. Buck, how do people get hooked up there?
Just go to Clay and Buck for Hillsdale.com. That's Clay and Buck for Hillsdale.com. You get Imprimis sent to you for free. It's a concise, smart, useful, and fun publication. Start receiving your own free copy of this Digest of Liberty. Just go to this website right now, Clay and Buck for Hillsdale. A couple of words there. Clay and Buck for Hillsdale.com.